These are some poems inspired by cruising down fjords in Norway in early summer. Graphite grey, sand seep brown, pale autumn nightshades. Mountain stands in rain sheen lustrous hue. Snows polystyrene tiles cap leech scarred stone, creating time's drawn heritage. Luminescence pure, sun's rays break through thick grey clouds, patchwork gold beyond Valhalla haze of Viking dream echoing through the fjord's canyon. Blakean poise, the broken cloud mist meld melt, snow-clad peaks doff their caps to summer's brief, before once again the winter's mantle spreads. New petroleum night, fjords plants splayed, Norway's prize, Saudi's fresh oil chum. And the clouds, Australia becomes the ball on Italy's boot, Sicily develops to Gulag archipelago, blue spell, cloud break, sun's revenge. Low slung cloud masks peaks, snow top crest, verdant slopes white flecked, nature's smoke, snails slide pour down, magma frozen trails, scored valley sides, and finally snow. Snow's inner secret is a glowing aquamarine heart. Waters cascade down granite steep, energies mist beyond white to palest blue above the path we take. Winter's icy fingers caress the land, loath to cease. Summer surrender, allowing flows beneath stone-carved paths, assist descent, careering unseen beneath the road, pulsing with nature's echo. Thank you.
Cheers, Simon. And next up we have Steve Logan.
I was fortunate enough 4 years ago to fall in love with my best friend, and then unfortunately 6 months ago we had to split up due to pursuing different careers and stuff. And for anyone who knows what it feels like, it's tough to, you know, when you're with your best friend and it goes tits up, you know, only do you lose your girlfriend, but you lose the person that you want for comfort, but you lose your girlfriend. So we made a pact not to speak for 6 months, but unfortunately I got pissed last week and I broke that pact. So I sent her this poem. It's called Palomatini, then you do it. Even if you think that I'm seeing someone new, or weeping in my undies because I'm feeling sad and blue, though my mind might be distracted by a path that's bright and new, inside the hard drive of my heart is 16 gigabytes of you. Has she started something slow and steady, or is she writing all around her? I bet that I could name 3 guys who have since tried to mentor her. I'm glad that I no longer think that I can't live without her, but I miss the way she made me feel when I had my arms around her. Too much love and not enough money is a heartbreaking mixture, and I can't ask you to waste your life in the hope that I get richer. I've come to terms with knowing someone else is sleeping with you, but my heart will self-destruct if I see him in your profile picture. Even that will heal with time and rum and another's warm embrace. The undeserving love you gave me, I'm sure I won't replace. To be the man you think I can, we had to pay a price. Now and then I reminisce on what we had to sacrifice. I'm proud of how we coped, putting ourselves through so much pain, while leaving just enough affection for our friendship to remain. We were friends before we were friends in love. I don't want to forget. Breaking your heart is something that always fills me with regret. I wish you luck and fortune as you embrace your new endeavour, but I fear that college life next year will part our hearts forever. Before it does, I want a chance to remember what I'll miss. Hold you close, squeeze you tight, and steal a final kiss. I have going to read one more, it's a little bit less depressing, sorry. it's called Usually Unusual. The world in which we live is fantastically diverse. Being unable to appreciate it is mankind's only curse. Ease your foot off the accelerator and put it in reverse. Take stock of your surroundings before you're planking in a hearse. I met a man from Montreal who could chew and swallow glass. As he offered me an empty bottle, I said, I'll have to pass. But I have a question for you which might seem a little crass. Is it just as painful when it's passing through your ass? A set of female twins from Naples who were both quite hard of hearing, whose only use for ears was somewhere apt to hang an earring. As I made love to one, the only thing that I was fearing was laughing at my flatmate's commentary and noisy cheering. A middle-aged part-time model and lingerie designer, born in Amsterdam but spent her youth in Southeast China, who because of long, exhaustive training undertook, whilst as a minor, could suck up half a litre of beer through the lips of her vagina. A bodybuilder from Lincolnshire with two kids and a wife called Annie, who decided, out of the blue one day, that he had one penis too many. For him it wasn't enough to live his days out as a tranny. She's happy now, but looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger with a fanny. If I hadn't seen it for myself, I wouldn't believe the rumour. I met a German person with an actual sense of humour. He was dying slow and steadily from an uncontained brain tumour. His cheerful disposition made me wish I'd met him sooner. The people I've described above are rare and quite unique. You are unlikely to bump into one every single week. But if you're fortunate to meet one, please don't treat them like a freak. They tell the funniest stories if you'll only let them speak. Thank you.
Thanks, I think.
thanks.
Sounds like true love anyway, the first one. But next up, we have our very own regular, Sue Blue. I think she also has a request for you all. That's a very humble request. I would like to announce something that is not an event. But I was given the chance of being video recorded in Christchurch for a few performance pieces that I might upload, and for the creation of an atmosphere, I would be allowed to invite a small personal audience, or small in big church, you know. Now, we will probably do it on a Monday, and very hopefully next Monday afternoon, because the Trust is closed on those Mondays from now on through the summer. But this will need a special announcement. I'll have to reconfirm that. I don't know if anyone wants to specifically keep in touch with me to hear it, except if they're not on Facebook or something like that. Well, on Facebook I'll definitely announce when it is. I'd love you to tell friends who know me, people who know me, who like the poetry, to actually make it there. It would be at 3 o'clock on a Monday, and very hopefully next Monday. If not, I will make a different announcement on that. Well, gratefully appreciate it.
You should post it on your Bell's Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I can't really publicise it big. It's got to be private, and you know, it's behind the scenes. I'm lucky to be working there, and it's fascinating to get that chance. Anyway, I want to do a poem today out of my book, In the Consciousness of Earth, because the poem has been terribly, terribly misunderstood and misinterpreted in the context of this book, and therefore I want to give it a new chance by giving a short background about it. The poem is called In the Station, and I was in the States. I was very much rubbing up against the culture there. And this clearly takes the perspective of society. It does not depict the perspective of the poet as such. So in the context of this poem, of this book, this poem does not really stand out in my political views at all. In the station. Heavy metal guitars on radio boom into hard iron ears. From dark corners at the escalators, where untrained skaters proudly perform with expression bragging coolness their simple tricks on the rolling steps. Or from yellow walkmen in black pockets of silver riveted leather jackets. White poodles of chic ladies with large red flower hats and elegant white gloves bark and get into fights with dark shadowed scrubby street tykes wearing heavy gold collars who belong to dirty old men sitting homelessly under the waterproof roofs of the overcrowded train station. Movie youngsters styled in blue jeans run away from the tobacco hands begging for money and love. Beer bottle hooligans oozing the odour of hash with skateboards under their feet and heavy metal booming walkmen in pockets of red, of black leather jackets try to attract the chic ladies and escape from the scrubby tykes.
Thanks, Sue, and good luck with your filming of your work.
Thanks very much.
Exciting. And next we have Rob Erfart.
This is called Too Easily Distracted. Blue cock on plinth in Trafalgar Square. An artistic impression of the patriarchy by a German feminist, an eminent German feminist.
Now I feel stupid. I will need a translation later. Next up we have Mose Jacobs. Great name. And born in Amsterdam. But it's a different story. I've got three poems that I'll read to you. Mostly, they come because I ask myself things. The first one is called Cassandra Wonders. How come there are places like this? Violets as the crossroads. The hawthorn blooms like ice, but sweeter. No burned out vehicles, hit by an IED. Dying women and children shattered around a dirt road. Just the noise of a blue tractor turning over the drying grass in the sunshine. A refreshing fragrance. Perhaps it's true what they say at the butcher shop, that death comes and goes like a tide, never omnipresent, always there. This one is a very complicated one, just warning you. A causal events, triple the signs, reoccurring after a dormant period. Flowers and mountains, as Rosenberg, as Rosenberg announces his reappearance. What does it mean? Except some vague reassurance that there is more between heaven and earth, as well as beneath. Carried in streams, brooks and rivers, flowing towards the sea, we all are. The difficult thing to decide is, am I just a log, floating mindlessly, until the moment of sinking? Wrestling with minor demons, a deceptively small task. There will be more. Compassion or willpower? A dangerous question. Survival über alles. Will we be selfish individuals or part of a group identity? Or, and this is where it gets mind-boggling,
happy to be a tiny cog in the human machinery. The last one is called Fossilized Sadness. Fossilized Sadness. A lower stratum where she drives her Toyota Corolla, long since crushed to scrap. A third of the road still before her. Dismissive, I didn't want to know her too well. Too awkward? Yet, it pains me, beyond belief, however brief, to see her speeding into the distance, unable to reconnect or recontextualize. Impossible to get off this thundering genetic train before it disappears into the tunnel. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Rose. And now we have somebody who is reading for the first time on the Ovale mic. So a warm welcome for Jane O'Donovan.
This is called Celebrity. I can read this one. That's perfect, man. That's fine. Celebrity, who will be left with a land bereft of ordinary folk, all of us soaked in spotlight? Who will stay in by night to approve and applaud or laud one as the next best thing? To whom will we sing from inside the screen when everybody is living the dream? Thank you.
Please do come again. And next up we have Eileen.
This is a children's poem. It's called If I Were a Millionaire. If I were a millionaire, I would go almost anywhere. I would live like a king. I could do almost anything. If I were a millionaire, I would have no worry or care. I'd sit back and relax while others pay the income tax. If I were a millionaire, I'd buy 10,000 combs for my hair, endless parties and lots of fun, with no regard for anyone. If I were a millionaire, designer gear is all I'd wear. I would not be seen in Penny's Best, accessorising with colour and zest. If I were a millionaire, there would be no low-cost fare. First class travel all the way, a different location every day. If I were a millionaire, I could go almost anywhere. So much money, I'd not know what to do. I love the thought, how about you?
Do not give that woman any money. Not a penny.
Oh,
well, maybe a penny, but not a million. Don't give her a million. Okay. Finally, last but not least, we have the very entertaining Christy Parker.
Liar. Okay, I wasn't sure what I was going to read. Can you just never smile?
Yeah,
I had a couple of poems in mind, but then Lee made reference to Celtic Tiger, and it kind of brought me back to 2001-2002, a poem that I haven't read since 2007, because it became less relevant after that. And Rab knows this poem, I think, because he remembered me reading it in New Orleans a long time ago, so I haven't read it for quite some time. But it's about a time when real estate was valued and becoming increasingly available, and it's called As I Was Tending My Window Box. As I was tending my window box, a man pulled up in his car. I watched him park on yellow lines and light up his cigar. And as he walked to where I stood, I sized up his profile. I saw a man with presence, but I saw no sign of style.
His teeth were tinged with yellow and his eyes were slightly red, and tufts of hair sprang from his nose down longer on his head. His ashen face looked like it had been fashioned out of paste, and the buttons of his cotton shirt fall battered with his waist. "'Tis a mighty day," I heard him say, "and I hope your health is blessed. Would you have the health I always say, don't fret about the rest. With a healthy life and a loving wife and a roof over his head, and then last desire is to expire in the comfort of his bed." An excess of insincerity emanated from this man, as every word I heard him speak slid as oil from a can. "I'm a self-made man myself," he droned. "I've a few fires on the go, that I rake a cache amongst the ash in this Celtic tiger glow." And then he spoke some puffing smoke about getting off one's ass, and of openings in the marketplace that no one should let pass. "Good window boxes," he observed, "are very hard to find. You cut that bloody crap," I said, "and say what's on your mind." And he handed me a little card, and the message on it said, told, "Will Gravis, developer, properties bought and sold. Would you do a deal," he said to me, "to sell the old window box? I fancy it is a good old spot to put up apartment blocks. I know it can take some clearing, it's a little small, but then again, it's the last piece left of Greenbelt space in Yawl." And I remember in my youth the amazing days I'd spent while grass paths paved my journeys before they poured cement. When I could see the river and the sky of grey or blue without some ugly high-rise flats obscuring nature's view. When the roar of commerce didn't drown the sound of children's glee before they built monstrosities like that damn shed in Green's Quay. Long before the profiteers came galloping into town with their JCBs and money schemes to tear our vistas down. Still, I say to this man, I didn't mind if his great plan went ahead, as long as he put something back that was just as good instead. But he preached about releasing and how fortunes would be made, so I told him what I thought of him and his commercial escapade. "You toad, you scumbag, you cat piece of shit, you slimebag, you sluncher, you dick cat's last spit, you mangy dark's cold, so you elephant snot, and you die in a dunk heap, and dear me, you rot. You venus of blister, you scarecrow, the twister of my head lies to bore you for 20 years, mister. You tapeworm is free for the abs of a cow, you scab that runs yellow on the back of a sow, you shite box, you bad pot, you dose of VD, you boil on the bum of a fat arse TV, you smell of hot steam from the piss of a mole. By the quest you shove all your plans up your..." He listened in silence, smacked his lips, then he said, "Well, sounds like to me you don't want to sell. But if I was to offer..." "Yes, blimey, you scumshite, your horse's nose bleed, you slug that has breakfast when a sheep has just peed, you maggot that squirms in the sewer on the ground where the western colostomy bags can be found, you drip from the lick of a joyless old man, may you choke on the air of the farts from your nan. You bucket of blue fly to stink in the sun, may the clap cramp your love life until you're 61. May you not get the message that I tried to make clear. Take your plans and your scams and get the fuck out of here." "All right, so," he said, "this is your loss, not mine. You think the box value should steeply decline?" "I doubt that," I said, "because the beauty of plants is that they mature without tax breaks or grants. And I've not seen a flower grow to a height, grow to such a height that my friends and my neighbours cannot see the light." He returned to his car, he got in, slammed the door, turned the key, glared at me, put his foot to the floor, and then he was gone. And I fumed for a while, then the breeze caught a tulip, and I swear, it smiled. Seriously, just one thing for once more, because I don't want to be sophomore. This is bringing us from back to our childhood, similar to the last radar job I did. And you'll probably be familiar with this at some way, I think. It's called The Terrible Fate of the Fifth Teletubby. We see them on the telly as they wave and shout, "Uh-oh," and our children find them colourful and cute. There's Tinky Winky, Lala, Dipsy, and Small Foe. And each, to look at them, you'd think, or anything else, and to look at them, you'd never think the truth. But those smiling little cuties that dance without a care hide a secret behind every song and jive. For skullduggery was rife, there was evil in the air. The day they murdered Teletubby 5. Teletubby 5 was the sweetest by a mile, with his snow-white suit of fur and smile like honey. Theodore was his name. He had wit and charm and style, and a rich uncle who had left him lots of money. In those days before their fame, they would play for many hours, and they never sought a penny for their fun. But then Duda lost his wallet while throwing in the flowers, and that was when the fateful plot begun. Dipsy found them, Mula, Pan, Lala got around. Tiki Winky flapped his arms and jumped with joy. Ow, we could have more of what Dipsy has just found, hissed Lala, if we kill our glamour boy. How they danced and laughed and held each other tight, although the sun tuttered in the sky. Tiki Winky had to wait to Duda's cave that night, where he snored amidst his dreams of custard pie. They tiptoed past his bed to the larder out the back, where he kept his magic mushrooms and sweet cakes. They found his odorous porridge and opened up the pack and poured up in poison amongst the flakes. Their evil deed being done, they beat a fast retreat. Some Duda woke and yawned and left his bed and poured his porridge from the pan before sitting down to eat. But 11 minutes later, he was dead. The killer Teletubby stuffed Duda in a bin and laughing rolled it to a talking well. 1, 2, 3, sang Tinky Winky, and they flung the body in. A warm the well of hell if he should tell. Having filled their pockets deep with Duda's stolen wealth, they sang and jumped and played and rolled with glee. And a man from television saw them on the hills and felt that they should straight away be on TV. Yeah, we see them on the telly as they wave and shout, uh-oh, and our children clap their hands when they arrive. But over the hills and far away, those Teletubbies know, down a well lies poor old Teletubby 5. Thank you.